Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you live today from Colorado Springs, Colorado. I'm out here in Colorado Springs. Of course, this is kind of an evangelical mecca out here, as it has become a place where the headquarters of many Christian institutions, parachurch and Christian publishers and all the rest are located. Perhaps most famously, this is the headquarters of Focus on the Family. And I've been out here today for a very special day, marking 33 years of service by Dr. James Dobson as the founder of Focus on the Family and the voice of the Focus on the Family radio program. I'm a member of that board of directors, and we've had an historic few days out here. Days filled with a lot of emotion and days filled with a lot of promise. And it is good today to be able to talk with you, and I'm live here from the studios here at Focus on the Family, and we're going to be talking about what we should expect as Christians out of politics. This is a big question. It's a good question for a Friday like this, for us to just take into account what is exactly we're looking for out of politics. Let me tell you what the background for this is. Of course, you had the healthcare summit with President Obama and Republican leaders, and if you saw the headlines on today's papers, it's pretty much an assortment of the summit got nowhere, the battle lines are drawn. The same kind of headlines that we've been seeing for some time, having to do with the arguments and debates over health care and other major legislative proposals in Washington. But there's a very interesting article out in USA Today. It was published in Wednesday's edition. The headline is "Partisanship is OK." It's by Ross Baker. And by the way, Mr. Baker is a political scientist. He teaches at Rutgers University. He's a member of USA Today's Board of Contributors, and he makes an essential argument. His argument is this: gridlock is not always bad. Having a partisan context for politics in Washington is not bad. That's what democracy is all about. A one-party system doesn't have any kind of debate. A one-party system wouldn't have any kind of gridlock by definition, but a one-party system would not be democracy. It would be, after all, much like what you have as the Communist Party rule in China. He writes this. He says, "Partisanship in a democracy is not abnormal. It is essential. It presents citizens with alternatives. And when partisan differences are sharp, these alternatives are clearer. Partisanship normally carries with it a certain amount of philosophical baggage." But nonetheless, he goes on to say, look, there's a way to avoid having partisanship. That is, just have one party. You know, this gets to the whole question, what we expect out of politics and what we're looking for, even more importantly, out of government. This is an honest, sincere, urgent question for Christians. And there's more in the background of my urgency to raise this today. I saw a newspaper article just the other day indicating that younger Americans are beginning to think of government as the source of where solutions should come from for society. They're saying, look, they're not coming from other sectors. Maybe it's the government's responsibility. Another major magazine article that came out just in recent days saying that polls are indicating that younger Americans are thinking that they're going to have to be dependent on government at some point in their lives for either economic or other forms of assistance. You know, this is a sea change in terms of America. It leads me to wonder, I wonder how many Christians are thinking through what we should expect from government. And there's some very clear biblical principles in play here. One of the principles is we should not expect government to do what we should do for ourselves. There's some basic lessons learned through the hard history of humanity having to do with placing too much trust and confidence in government. You don't want to minimize government and political responsibility, but you don't want to maximize it either. It's a good conversation for us to have. The phone number is 893-877. That is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program. The issue today is what Christians should expect out of the political system, out of the political order, and from government. Big issues, big questions. And of course, as you're watching what's going on in Washington, you realize there are a lot of folks who really aren't asking this question at all. They're just in some kind of default position where you assume they're expecting that government's going to come through with what they need at just the right time. Let's look at some other issues in the news. Speaking of government and the military, another interesting article. This is in the New York Times. It has to do with Defense Secretary Robert Gates registering his concern that NATO members in Europe are now adopting such anti-military views that the Europeans seem unwilling and unable to fight for just about anything. The demilitarization of Europe, he says, where large swaths of the general public and political class are averse to military force and the risks that go with it, has gone from a blessing in the 20th century to an impediment to achieving real security and lasting peace in the 21st. That's an amazing statement from a United States Defense Secretary. Because here you have the American chief defense officer, in this case, the civilian in charge of the Department of Defense, who is saying to Europeans in the context of a NATO summit with officers and officials at the National Defense University, he was saying, look, the demilitarization of Europe was absolutely necessary to some extent after two horrible world wars in the 20th century. But we're living in a dangerous world. And for Europe to be demilitarized right now is far more of an impediment to world peace and a danger to world order than an assist. That's a very interesting issue. And it also gets back to a basic Christian question. It's one that the thoughtful Christians have to struggle with time and time again. What is the boundary line for the legitimate use of military force? And we're living in one of those days when Christians are going to have to answer and of course, ask that question repeatedly. But it comes clear, I think, to most people that a complete demilitarization is hardly an answer to the challenges that we face in a very real world. And the Bible reminds us that in a Genesis 3 world, that is in a world where there are dangers and enemies and those who would do horrible things to innocent people, where there are enemies of peace and security and well-being and human flourishing, you've got to have someone who is willing to step in. And that's why you have God giving his people in both the Old and New Testaments a body of law. That is why you have Paul in Romans chapter 13 saying that it's imperative that the government have some power to enforce the law. And, of course, that gets to the use of military force as well. Interesting questions. The military is kind of front and center in a lot of the concerns today. The headline in Wednesday's New York Times national page is about the testimony of two generals who are wary about repealing the military's don't ask, don't tell policy. In this case, the chiefs of both the Army and the Air Force gave testimony before different committees on the Hill, suggesting that a time of war with U.S. forces on the ground in two separate land wars is not the time to make this change. Army Chief of Staff General George Casey said, I do have serious concerns about the impact of a repeal of the law on a force that is fully engaged in two wars and has been at war for 8.5 years. We just don't know the impacts on readiness and military effectiveness. Similar statements were made by Air Force Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz. He was speaking before the House Armed Services Committee. You know, folks, these are big issues. You're talking here about the Obama administration's announced intention to repeal the don't ask, don't tell policy. We've talked about that on the radio program. And it gets back to the agenda of fully normalizing homosexuality. And if you do have as your agenda fully normalizing homosexuality, then any distinction made in an institution as central and important to American life as the military simply has to be removed. That's why those who have been pushing that agenda have had this policy in the bullseye of their target for some time. Now, one of the interesting intersections that comes when you think about the military and the don't ask, don't tell policy and the arguments that are used on both sides having to do with repealing the don't ask, don't tell policy. Here is another news story, and this one comes from USA Today. Get this. The Pentagon has moved to lift a decades-long policy that prohibits women from serving aboard Navy submarines. At issue is the end of a policy that kept women from serving aboard the last type of ship off-limits to them. The thinking was, I'm reading here from USA Today, that the close quarters aboard subs would make co-ed service difficult to manage. Defense Secretary Robert Gates notified Congress in a letter signed Friday of last week that the Navy intends to repeal the ban on female sailors on submarines. Congress has 30 days to weigh in. Now, folks, we've been looking at this, too, because the integration of women in the armed services has now reached the point where we are integrating women pretty much fully into combat roles. And I realize this is controversial. I know it's controversial, but I also believe it's true. I think any nation that would routinely put its women in harm's way in combat has lost a sense of itself and a sense of its moral bearings and is not indeed doing that which is right, not to mention that which will aid the flourishing of this civilization and society for years to come. But, you know, there's more to it than that. The intimate quarters of a submarine would be a difficult place, you would think, for men and women to mix. That's been the policy for decades. That has been one of the issues cited, of course, in the defense of the don't ask, don't tell policy. You have to wonder if there's not a strange juxtaposition when in one day's news you get these two separate stories, both indicating that there is change afoot. You know, folks, a society that begins to blur the gender distinctions, it's losing its moral sanity. A society that begins to normalize behavior that does not lead to marriage and reproduction, and in this case normalizes homosexual behavior, is a society that sets itself on eliminating even further distinctions and erasing additional boundaries. We can only guess where that will lead. We really do know. We're going to come back to talk about what Christians should expect out of government. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, one of the issues faced by Christians in every generation, in every country, in every century, is how we should expect from government that which is right to expect, and how we should not have expectations that are either too minimal or too maximal and just get the question wrong. In other words, what should we expect out of government? Let's not expect too much. Let's not expect that government can do what government cannot do. But let's also not expect too little. Let's hold government accountable to deliver on what really is government's legitimate responsibility. So let's talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's toll-free, 877-893-TALK. So let me just lay out a few things for you to think about here. And when you think about people who expect too little out of government, well, the ultimate case of that is someone like an anarchist. An anarchist believes that government itself is simply too repressive, that human liberty is endangered whenever there is any government at all. And so the classical anarchists are those who say, down with the king, down with the parliament, down with the Congress, down with the president, down with the legislature, down with the bureaucrats, down with everyone, and let's just have human society without government. Well, let's think about what that means. That means human society without law. That means human society without police forces. That means human society without regulations. That means human society that is basically, well, it may be the anarchist dream, but I think for most of us it would be a nightmare. I don't want to think about living in a society without laws and the rule of law. I don't want to think of living in a society in which there is no 911 to call. We are living in a Genesis 3 world where Christians are the very first who must know that there have to be structures in society, otherwise the society implodes upon itself. Human beings, we believe, are indeed made in the image of God, but they are also sinners, and sinners need the controlling, restraining force of law and of legal authority, and that requires politics. And of course, there's more to it than that. I think one of the legitimate roles of government is that government should provide for the common weal and common human flourishing with minimal but very basic rules, regulations, structures, statutes. I think we also need a military. I think in a Genesis 3 world, going back to what Defense Secretary Gates had to say concerning the NATO powers and the demilitarization of Europe, you know, not having an adequate military could be a very dangerous thing for the people of a country. You don't want too much, but you don't want too little. So those who are expecting too little out of government are those who basically come along and say, government is always, in every situation, a problem. It is never, in any context, a solution. And I'm going to suggest to you that Christians can't buy that argument. But, you know, if you look at especially the last 200 years, the greater temptation has gone in the other direction. The greater temptation has been seen in Christians who are looking for government to solve problems that government cannot hope or dream to solve. Let me just state the most obvious one. Human beings, in their most basic need a redeemer, need redemption from sin. Government can't do that. Government can have rightful structures that can restrain sin. Government can have judges and juries and judicatories and jails and penitentiaries and all the rest that can be used to restrain evil and punish the evildoer. But government cannot solve the problem of sin. Government cannot solve the problem of human nature. Government cannot make men good. Government cannot lead to better human beings. That's outside the government's power. Government can't solve intractable problems that are due to human nature, human sinfulness. But government does have a role somewhere between expecting too little and expecting too much. I think this article in USA Today by Ross Baker is very interesting because it really gets to a very essential insight, and that is that sometimes when you have something like what is now described as gridlock in Washington, it's not a symptom of a problem, which is government that is broken. it can just as readily be a sign of government that is working, which is to say that if you look at the polls on the healthcare issue, Americans are divided. I think there's a pretty good sign that most Americans right now would rather have nothing than to have a healthcare reform bill that they see as too expensive and too intrusive and too problematic and too complex. I think that much is very clear, and that's why the Obama administration is having great difficulty getting it through. But nonetheless, the problem that is cited as gridlock is probably better seen as democracy going through the tortuous, controversial, long endurance test of actually getting at the right policy by arguing about what is inadequate until you get there, and having parties and partisan debates that really get the issues out on the floor, out for public debate, and allow the American people to really know what's going on. Let me ask you, when you look at America today and you think about not just government in general, but this government, what do you expect? Again, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm here in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And, you know, as I was flying in to Colorado Springs on Wednesday, I had the most amazing experience. I was on a plane filled with a unit of Army Rangers returning to Fort Carson. And they had been in service in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they were coming home. And it was a moving thing to get on this plane in Dallas, and all these soldiers are getting on in their camouflage gear. And they traveled with minimal luggage, just a backpack, and they put it on, and they were eager to get home. But I'll tell you, seeing them get on that plane was nothing like seeing them get off of that plane. And here at the Colorado Springs Airport, to be there when I was just with some other passengers getting off the plane with them and saw the families waiting for them, wives and children. These are basically all men that were on the plane as I was landing. And they're just coming off the gate, just seeing wives and children run to husbands and fathers and see the reunions going on there. It almost felt like you were intruding on a private celebration, but it was right there in the concourse of a major airport. They simply couldn't wait to embrace each other. And I was looking at that and thinking, once again, what sacrifices these folks make. This afternoon, as I was getting ready for radio, I was watching cadets of the United States Air Force Academy jumping out of airplanes. The jump team jumping out with the front range of the Rockies in the background on a spectacular day. And I was just amazed again, what sacrifices these folks make for us. And I don't want a government that is so minimal that it doesn't provide for the national defense. And yet I also don't want to live in a police state. I don't want to live in a military state. I don't want to live in a place where you find soldiers on every street corner fully loaded with their semi-automatic weapons or automatic weapons as a sign of the fact that you're living in a military state. But the military is just one dimension of where we have to live in the balance between too little and too much. Christians need to think this through, because I'll tell you, there are a lot of Christians who are tempted right now in the year 2010 to just assume that government is always wrong. And government, well, they'll just say that any government is too much government. Folks, that is not a biblical or a Christian argument. We definitely have to counter those who are expecting too much out of government. We definitely have to be clear that government cannot save, government cannot redeem, government cannot change human nature, government cannot deal with the sin problem in terms of solving it. It can only restrain it. But on the other hand, having no government leads to an anarchy, which in both testaments of the Bible is represented as a curse to God's people. You know, in the Old Testament, it speaks of a time when every man did what was right in his own sight. That is, no government, no law, no respect. And that is not a society you want to live in. So what do you expect out of government? What should Christians expect out of government? Let's throw it out there for discussion. The phone number toll-free is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Are we expecting too little from government or too much? My guess is that an awful lot of Americans, especially for the latter part of the last half century, have probably been expecting too much. And that's why we see government now with soaring deficits, with entitlement programs overburdened and reaching what is almost certainly to be a breaking point in coming years. But there are also those who are expecting too little. They want government just basically to disappear. And I want us to think about the fact that the Bible is actually pretty clear that we need government. The Bible dignifies government. As a matter of fact, we are told that God has given to us as the good gifts of his creation certain institutions, and those institutions start with marriage and the family, and then include, of course, the church and government. Government is a part of the goodness of God's creation. Now, you say, where did that come from? Well, law implies government. In other words, all you have to have in order to have what would be defined as a governmental structure is a body of law. And so when you look at the Old Testament, God gives his law. His law comes in the form of statutes and commandments. And when the law takes effect, there has to be a body who will adjudicate the law. That's the judges. And so you end up having what would be described as minimal government, but still government. And then you start looking at the appropriate roles of government as set forth in the administration of God's law, and you can see there is a role for government. And in the New Testament, for instance, in Romans chapter 13, you have Paul reminding us that government has a role to play. And God put government here because we need indeed government to punish the evildoer. Jesus himself, when he was asked about the coin, he famously said, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and under God the things that are God." He did not say that Christians have nothing to render to Caesar, that is, to the government. He just said we better be clear about what we owe Caesar and what we owe Christ and not get that confused. I think right now there are a lot of Christians who are expecting too much from government. They think government should basically, take care of its citizens in a paternalistic way. And government, of course, has taken on more of that role with the coming of Social Security and entitlement programs throughout the 20th century. And a great debate could be had about whether the net effect of those things has been good or bad. But the reality is that there certainly was perceived a need when Social Security was put in place because the nation was facing millions of elderly and older persons who were basically starving to death and had been abandoned by their families or were no longer able to take care of themselves. And Social Security emerged out of a very clear political and historical context. But now we have an entire universe of entitlement programs and social assistance programs, whether it's Medicare and Medicaid, or you start to look at now the massive proposals for health care reform, and you start to realize we really are in a situation in which government is taking over large sectors of the economy. What do you expect government to do? That's not only a legitimate question. In many ways, it's an absolutely essential question. There's still time for you to call. I'd be very interested to know, with all this debate over health care, with all the debate over the financial stimulus package and government intervention in the economy, with all this conversation, with the election cycle coming up for the off-year elections, what are you thinking of as the Christian understanding of government? Should we have a lot of government, or should we have minimal government? And what will we cite as biblical principles to try to figure this out? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, I think if you ask the question the right way, most people are going to get to the answer. That's a basic principle of rhetoric, and that's why he who gets to ask the question often gets to answer it. So if I ask the question, should we seek a maximum amount of government or a minimal amount of government, my guess is most Americans in general, and most Christians specifically, are going to say, we need minimal government. And I'm going to say that that's the right answer. But the question is, how do we determine how much is indeed minimally necessary? Let me just point out a couple of things when you think about this. We do need a government to establish laws and the rule of law and a regulatory process just for making things happen. We don't want some people driving on the right side of the road and some people driving on the left side of the road. And government has a legitimate purpose there. On the other hand, we don't want government to take on the entire transportation responsibility. Most of us understand that if government gets too large, our liberty is constrained. So when you start looking at that, you say, well, we want government to come up with a body of rules so that you know which side of the street to drive on, but we don't want government to do the driving. You know, the good thing is that for Christians, there are some biblical principles that play into effect here and should help to guide our thinking. Number one, we understand that human beings are responsible creatures. That means we can't franchise out that responsibility to government. We'll talk about that and more when we come right back on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. What should we expect from government? Let's hear from the Apostle Paul. Paul writes in Romans chapter 13, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection not only to God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed." You know, that is a classic statement. In those few verses, in seven verses of Romans 13, you have the distillation of a Christian understanding of the political order and the role of government. Not too much, not too little, but a definite responsibility. The phone number is 877-893-8255 in Lincoln, Nebraska. Chris is on the line. Go ahead, Chris. What do you think?
Thank you for the word of God there. I believe constitutionally that government should be there to protect us from those from without and protect us within with laws and police officers and courts. Other than that, there really isn't much that they should be doing. And like with the health care crisis, I think 90% of the cost of health care is because of government intervention in some way.
Yeah, you know, that's a very interesting thing. But let me tell you, I want to complicate matters just a little bit, Chris, because I'm very tempted to agree with you. I don't know that I can set a percentage. I certainly see government in this kind of situation, when it intervenes, as being more costly than not and probably making the issue worse rather than better. But I'll tell you, you know, one of the reasons that government is in this in such a big way is because of the breakdown of the family, but because we have allowed the family to neglect by its breakdown some of its own members, where we would take care of each other. We're not taking care of each other. And so we've helped to create this problem. And the second thing is we sue each other. If you were to take tort litigation out of medical care, I think most people would be surprised how much is actually built into the system because we sue each other. So it's fascinating when you look at this and you realize that a structure of law does allow for that. And unfortunately, it can be misused. But it's still far better to have laws, even if they are misused, than to live without law. Thanks so much for your call, Chris. Let's go to Don, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening to WFIA. Go ahead, Don.
Yes, my comment is simplistic but foundational. Government is ordained by God, the same God who has revealed the principles of righteousness. And so government's responsibility is to protect the people being guided by principles of righteousness.
Okay, Don, help me with this. So the government is being guided by principles of righteousness. Where is the government going to find those principles?
The principles of righteousness come right from the Bible, that God's word that he has revealed.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Don. You know, this is where when you have, for instance, the ardent secularists. And I ran into this just in the last couple of days and in a couple of conversations I've had with folks in the media in particular, where you have people who say, look, there's a separation of church and state. Now, that's the wrong way to put it. That's a bad piece of language. You know, we just blame Thomas Jefferson for using that in a letter, and then Justice Hugo Black for digging it up in the 1950s and misusing it. But nonetheless, we do know that there are two separate spheres, the sacred and the secular. And we do not expect the government to take on the responsibility, the propagation of the gospel. But what's interesting is you have these ardent secularists who are arguing that the government should uphold justice and righteousness, but it never explains where the government's supposed to find those ideals and the grounding, the objective grounding for what is just and what is righteous. And that's where Christians also have a clear understanding of the limitation of government because of its sheer finitude. Government cannot determine the good. Government cannot determine the righteous and the right. It can uphold them, either to a lesser or a greater extent of competence, but it cannot come up with them. Government cannot conjure a morality. The government is going to be established according to some moral structure, and it's going to apply and judge by some moral structure, but government's incompetent to come up with it. And that's where, again, we have to realize that as Christians, we understand that God has planted his law in every one of us in conscience. He has imprinted his law in every atom and molecule of creation, and he has revealed his law to his people. And the reality is that if you look at the Western system of government, the rise of representative democracy, and the kind of respect for human rights that we have, it's entirely based upon a Christian understanding. You take that Christian biblical understanding out of that historical process, and you end up with a very different result in terms of what is believed to be human nature, what things lead to human good and human flourishing, and what should be the aims and ambitions of government. I appreciate the calls. Both Chris and Don had good points to make. You know, when you think about government, let me just throw this out. The Bible gives two nightmarish scenarios having to do with government. And they are found in both the overreach of government and in the underperformance of government, or having too much and too little. On the side of having too little government, you have the rebellion of Korah, and you have very clear warnings against anarchy. Especially in the Old Testament, you have God's people ruled by laws compared to the peoples around them who do not have those laws. And the clear message, for instance, of the book of Deuteronomy is that God's people have the blessings of his law, the restraining power of his law. And if you want to see what people look like when they are not governed by law, all Israel had to do is look at the peoples around it warring with each other, killing each other, sacrificing their infants to idols, and doing all kinds of things that demonstrated nothing but lawlessness and injustice and wrongdoing and iniquity. And Israel saw the nightmarish apocalyptic scenario of absolute anarchy. But on the other hand, when you look at the book of Revelation, you have a clear warning about too much government. You have the warning of the beast, this apocalyptic political figure, and the apparatus of government that is so overreaching that it puts marks on people and they can't buy or sell, they can't be involved in economics or trade, they can't provide food for their own families without taking on the mark of the beast. And that's where you see there's also an apocalyptic nightmare scenario, too much government. And that's why I am so thankful that the Word of God is so direct and so clear in a passage like Romans chapter 13 in the first 7 verses to set out for us that there is a function for government, and it's not an accidental function. It's a function that God himself gave government, not because he thinks government's just a good idea. It's because he knows us, he knows our needs, he cares for us, and he gives us what we need. And what we need is a right understanding of government, especially in these perilous times. Back with final thoughts. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. You know, in Romans chapter 7, the Apostle Paul makes mention of sin seizing the opportunity. Let me tell you, he was speaking there particularly the internal battle that the believer has in terms of fighting sin. Of course, we have the indwelling Holy Spirit in order to give us what we otherwise would not have as we fight that good fight against sin. But that whole expression of sin seizing the opportunity comes to mind when I see this news report coming out of the Telegraph, which is one of the major London newspapers, indicating that Apple Computer is now considering adding a new category to its App Store. That category would be explicit. So alongside categories such as entertainment, games, and productivity would be a new tag. It is known as explicit. Apple has not officially commented on the rumors or confirmed whether or not it will be adding an explicit category. Some developers are now reporting this category has been removed from iTunes Connect list. So it's going to be interesting to see. But let me tell you, Apple didn't come up with the demand, although Apple may decide to try to help make a profit by selling on the supply end. But the reality is that sin is here seizing another opportunity. You think about what has happened on the internet, what's happened with virtually every communications technology and every medium of entertainment and information. And not only does the good stuff get out there, the bad stuff does too. It tells you something of the pornographic drive of human beings, that there are people who evidently are going to use their cell phone. We already know that there are cell phone texting messages, porn texting messages, and all the rest, and illicit images and sexually explicit images available by texting over the internet, and of course by cell phones as well. But the iPhone has become kind of a paradigm symbol of communications technology in the 21st century, and the App Store has become the phenomenon whereby we're seeing the future shape of the culture in terms of the kinds of things that people are downloading and purchasing and using from the App Store. My guess is that human nature being as it is and sin being as powerful as it is, that if Apple does come along and put in place an explicit category, they'll have no shortage of business. That's just another reminder to us as well of why parents and others must take control of the technologies and make certain that we know how these instruments, appliances, and technologies are being used. You know, whether or not Apple does come along with an iTunes App Store category known as explicit, the reality is there's plenty of explicit material out there, all too much. Estimates are that pornography may be the seventh largest business in America right now. You know, folks, when you're talking about the role and purposes of government, protecting citizens from that kind of material, that ought to be at least one of the goals, doing it the right way, constitutionally, but protecting children and getting the job done. Back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.